How do we know that there's a God? How do I know that there is a God? How do you know that there is a God? Hi, folks. It's Andy, the analytical preacher. That's a simple question, and yet it's one of the most profound, probably not the, but one of the most profound and important questions that each of us must ask ourselves. There's multiple ways that we can approach this subject, and that's an awfully big topic for a short 20-minute podcast. There's a lot of ways that we can approach this subject. Thankfully, they sort of all lead to the same conclusion. They all lead to the same place. I want to hit some real high-level highlights here, some summary highlights here. You could look at, say, Thomas Aquinas' five ways and study those in some detail if you're interested. There are modern folks, modern philosophers, modern scientists, folks like William Lane Craig or John Lennox, who have written books about this that go to hundreds of pages that help us understand. I just want to hit the two or three main ways that folks have gone about trying to answer this question, or actually in some cases, they've not directly tried to answer it. It's become an accidental observation of their approach, or maybe they've even tried to directly refute the answer to the question. We cannot know a God exists, or we know a God does not exist, and yet in their approach, they actually come with the opposite conclusion that we do know that a quote-unquote God exists. So I'm just going to cover the general topic at a high level. How do we know there's even a God to worry about, to talk about, to study? Let's go back to the Greek philosophers. Aristotle, for example, who lived about 350 years or so before Jesus was born. Aristotle used what we call today deductive reasoning or deductive logic. So they would list out things that, well, since we know that this is an absolute fact, and we know that this is an absolute fact, then it would only be logical or possible for then this to follow from that. If we know that 5 is greater than 3, and if we know that 6 is greater than 5, then we can deduce that 6 is greater than 3. That's the type of logic that Aristotle and his folks were using. And using this deductive reasoning, and again, you can read Aristotle's work on this. Using deductive reasoning, the Greek philosophers determined that there was a need, that it was mandatory, that some eternal prime mover or uncaused cause must exist. The logic really simply goes like this. We see that the world works in cycles. The universe works in cycles. The sun comes up and the sun goes down. The different phases of the moon cycle around on a regular basis. Even on Earth, biological things are going in cycles. Frogs lay eggs that become tadpoles, which then become frogs. Oak trees drop acorns, which eventually become oak trees again. And so they understood things are working in cycles. And the fallacy of infinite regress would say, this can't go on forever. There really is no chicken and egg debate. At some point, either a chicken came without the egg, or an egg came without the chicken, because you just can't go back eternally with one having to have come from the other. And so they say, what must exist then, what is logically dictated, is that sometime in the finite past, may have been a long, long time ago, but sometime in the finite past, what they refer to, what Aristotle referred to as a cause or a mover that wasn't itself caused or moved, an eternal, quite powerful, uncaused cause or prime or initial mover must exist. Logic demands it. In the modern era of science, we don't think about deductive reasoning much. We think more about empirical processes. We think about inductive processes, inductive reasoning. And empirical science has also determined that our universe is not eternal, that it began at some finite time in the past. And astrophysicists, cosmologists, they now say not only did our universe begin, but it began abruptly, and it appears to have begun through some force which could both violate the natural laws that govern our universe and account for the existence of the natural laws that now govern our universe. And so at some point in the finite past, some eternal entity had to exist, which could supernaturally put our universe and the laws that govern it into place. We've not been able to, and they fear likely will not be able to detect this eternal entity. It exists in some other dimension. The cosmologists call this the multiverse. There's a multiverse out there. The multiverse is eternal. The multiverse is essentially infinite. And the multiverse is responsible for abruptly, supernaturally placing our universe and all the laws that govern our universe into existence. And whether you are a Christian scientist or the most hardcore atheist scientist, this idea that there is this infinite eternal entity out there that it goes by the term multiverse is essentially agreed universally. But if you look at what the Greek philosophers deductively derived, or you look at what modern scientists have empirically derived, this need for this eternal prime mover, this need for this infinite multiverse that has the supernatural abilities to creatively place our universe into existence, when you hear those ideas, they sound very godlike. So how would we describe God? Well, God is this infinite, eternal being who intentionally put our universe into existence. Aristotle may say, I don't know that the prime mover did it intentional. Atheist scientists would say, no, the multiverse most certainly did not do it intentionally or with purpose. It just did it. It's just a factor of the description of the multiverse that it does this thing, that it burps other universes into existence. It's unintentional. Those universes have no purpose. But just the idea that deductive philosophy and empirical inductive science have both come to the idea that there's this eternal creative entity out there. If we're honest with ourselves, we would agree, yes, that's a very godlike sounding entity that both of them have derived. And once you get to this godlike sounding prime moving multiverse, it's actually a very short leap, I think, logically, common sense wise. It's a very short leap to say, the proofs for the prime mover, the proofs for the multiverse really are proofs for an intentional designer. Because what we see in our universe and on our earth that we inhabit, there is just intentional, intense-looking design everywhere. Let me just give you a quick example. The second law of thermodynamics, as I was taught by different teachers and professors in high school and in college in physics classes, we talked about the second law of thermodynamics. One of the implications of the second law of thermodynamics that is always brought up is that the universe started in a highly structured and ordered way, and that it's been losing order and structure. It's been losing usable energy since its very beginning. It's one of the reasons we know the universe had to have a finite beginning at a point in time. If the universe were eternal, given the path, the track that it's on, which we cannot change, which does not change, the physicists tell us, the universe would already be completely unordered, unstructured, and have no usable energy left. The fact that it still has order and structure, though it's decreasing, the fact that it still has usable energy, though it's decreasing, says it's not eternal. But then the question always comes to the little curious physics student sitting in the back row. If our universe began more structured, more ordered, with more usable energy, what structured it? What provided that order? That's a logical question that demands an answer. And the examples that were given to me, again, in different classes, teachers or professors, they said, the universe is like a rubber band. The teacher took this right out of a textbook. Universe is like a rubber band, and if you stretch a rubber band to its fullest resistance, the fibers are as tight as they can be. But it's unnatural to be in that state. And as soon as you let the rubber band go, very quickly in the case of a rubber band, of course, it goes back to its natural condition. And they said, that's our universe. Think about it as a rubber band that's been stretched to its maximum tightness, its maximum tautness. It seems a bit unnatural. And so as the universe has progressed down through the years, it's going back, and in the universe's case quite slowly compared to a rubber band flying across the room, it's going back to that less stretched, that less tense state. Another professor said, it's like a balloon that has been blown up. But again, something had to intentionally blow that balloon up. It's not the natural state for that little piece of rubber or latex to fill itself with air and have this incredible air pressure tension increasing the size of the balloon 5 or 10 times its natural original state. Something has blown that balloon up until this pressure inside and this tension and the surface area have increased. And as we, even if we tie that balloon off pretty tight and we set it in a corner, over the course of hours, weeks, months, years, and decades, that balloon is going to leak that air and it's going to go back to its more natural state, this unpressurized, this untense state. And again, the professors are telling me that's what our universe is like. That's the implication of the second law of thermodynamics. Another said, it's like a piece of cloth, and the individual threads were tightly woven into this fabric, probably to make some design. And now over time, that piece of cloth, that fabric, is slowly wearing out. It's deteriorating over time. And so whether you're in your last physics class of your undergraduate degree and looking forward to going to graduate school and majoring in cosmology or astrophysics, or whether you're really an elementary school child who heard this definition of the stretch rubber band or the balloon that's been blown up, just a logical common sense question is, how did it get that way? If it's not natural, who stretched the rubber band? Who blew up the balloon? Who wove the cloth? That's a natural, logical question to ask. And I believe when we combine the idea, well, deductive reasoning and inductive empirical science tells us there's a prime moving multiverse type entity that's required. I believe the highly structured design of our universe, the fact that someone pulled the rubber band or blew up the balloon at the very, very beginning, strongly suggest that the creation of our universe was intentional. I said at the beginning that one of the most important questions we have to ask ourselves is there a God, yes or no? And or how do we know there is a God? But I think the most important question is, given that we know there is some prime moving multiverse type entity in existence that created the universe, that created the laws that govern our universe, even though it created them supernaturally outside of the laws that govern our universe, there's some prime moving multiverse entity that blew up the balloon that is now slowly leaking air. The most important question is, who or what is that prime moving multiverse? Did it intentionally create the universe and me? Does the universe have purpose? Do I have purpose? Can I know this prime moving multiverse? Can I have a relationship with that eternal creator? That's the most important question. This is what the Bible says about whether the eternal creator that we all now agree logically must exist. This is what the Bible says about whether it was intentional and whether it has purpose and whether we can have a relationship with the prime moving multiverse. Genesis chapter 1 verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. For a number of centuries, scientific folks laughed at that verse and said the universe had no beginning. So from the very first words of the Bible, we know that the Bible is not true. Today we say from the very first beginning, very first words that begin the Bible, we begin to see that the Bible is true. In the beginning, God created. In the beginning, a personal God intentionally created the universe. Genesis 1:1 restated, God is the prime uncaused cause. Genesis 1:1 restated, God is the empirically necessary, eternal, infinite multiverse that spawned the universe in which you live. And he did so intentionally. Go to the New Testament. The Apostle Paul writes in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. For what can be known about God is plain to humans, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so people are without excuse. Paul is saying here, for not seeking God and trying to build a relationship and align themselves with God. Paul is simply saying, down through time, humans will use deductive logic. Humans will use inductive empirical methods of modern science. And here's what they're going to come up with. There is an eternal creative force that is required to explain. And this eternal creative force is divine in the sense that it could supernaturally put our universe in place. The laws that govern our universe say a universe can't be created from within our universe. So our universe had to be created from outside of our universe, and the laws that govern our universe had to have been put in from outside our universe. So the prime mover and the multiverse, or the God of the Bible, had to do that. And Paul is saying the invisible attributes of his eternal power and divine nature, what started everything, there had to be an uncaused cause. It's God. But that uncaused cause had to have tremendous power to create something as massive as our universe. Paul says his eternal power has been clearly perceived, and it had to do it abruptly in a way that would essentially be supernatural, that would have violated the laws of the universe that was about to be put in place. And Paul says, and his divine nature is also clearly perceived. So the Bible was simply anticipating, as you come to realize that a prime moving multiverse is necessary, you'll clearly perceive that it is the God of the Bible who intentionally created, provided purpose, and is an entity, is a God with whom we can and should have a relationship. As I said, this could be a 600-page book. Don't have time for that in a short podcast. Let me give you a couple of other podcasts I put out here that touch on this same topic. And so perhaps if you listen to all of these podcasts, it would give you a little bit more flavor, a little bit more detail. One is a podcast entitled, How Do We Know the Bible is True? A second podcast is entitled, Design, the Key Factor in the Historical Debate Between Atheists and Christians. A third podcast I've put out is called God of the Gaps, or Science of the Gaps, ? A fourth and fifth are The Relationship of the Bible and Science, Part 1, The Relationship of the Bible and Science, Part 2, and finally, my own testimony, which is entitled My Rational Journey to Faith. In each of those, you will see information and detail that helps to fill in the gaps of what we've talked about in this podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, this is Andy.